Football Weekly is on the
air. Hi, I'm Hub Arkush, and along with Eric Edholm and Arthur Arkush, it is our great pleasure to bring you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly, where every week we try and bring you all the news, scoops, and rumors, both on and off the football field.
Aaron Hernandez's shocking arrest. We'll break down all the stunning developments in the NFL this week.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us again this week for Pro Football Weekly on the radio. I'm Hub Arkush, and I am joined by Senior Editor Eric Edholm and Associate Editor Arthur Arkush. And, guys, we're going to talk some football eventually in this show, but that's just not the news around the National Football League this week. It's been a very bad week for the NFL on the crime blotter, if you will, specifically for the New England Patriots, although not just the New England Patriots, but that is the story of the hour, the day, and the week. Aaron Hernandez charged with first-degree murder. Four additional weapons charges, even though there's a long way to go in flushing out a case. There will be a trial. There will be due process. As the prosecuting attorney in Massachusetts laid out the case, it sounds like they've got some pretty compelling stories to tell about Aaron Hernandez. And, Eric, you know, it's troubling to me in just listening to what we know so far, what seem to be indisputable facts, video evidence, things like that. This was obviously, I'm not going to say a troubled young man, just a very different young man. And I can't imagine that everybody, teammates and New England Patriots organization, just missed it all. It had to be brewing in the background.
Yeah, absolutely it did. But it didn't stop the Patriots from giving him a very pricey extension last year. They obviously felt like he had turned some kind of corner. At least he bought into the team thing. And maybe he did while he was at the facility. You know, we don't really know, but they obviously felt that he had gotten to a certain level of maturity that he could handle this new contract. But we're finding out that if these allegations are true, it's just an unbelievable story. And now he's been mentioned in another case too, another possible homicide as well. So we don't know the full story. There was something that happened in Florida that was still remains unsolved to this day that he was mentioned in as well. So a lot of unanswered questions about Aaron Hernandez and a career that appears to be over at this point.
Yes. Story that broke late Wednesday, early Thursday of this past week, that Hernandez is now also being investigated in a drive-by shooting that occurred, I believe, last summer, in which two were left dead. There was a third person shot. Again, he's just being investigated. That could turn out to be nothing. Arthur, you look at this situation, and again, we have to emphasize, Aaron Hernandez is innocent until proven guilty. All we can do, though, is react to what is now a two-week investigation and a ton of information that has come out to suggest that he wasn't involved in any way is impossible. Now, I'm not indicating that the Patriots are responsible in any way. I'm not saying, gosh, somebody should have known, somebody should have done something about it. But when you hear the comments of retired veteran offensive tackle Matt Light, who said, "I never embraced anything about Aaron Hernandez," it tells you, I don't want to say there were warning signals of an attempted murder, but there were certainly warning signals that this was not your normal, everyday NFL player.
Yeah, I think so, too. And we've been hearing other accounts now of just instances where, you know, Hernandez spent most of his time away from the team, was a little bit of a loner, and perhaps another one of those cases where he's just spending too much time at, you know, Boston, only a couple hours from Bristol, where he grew up, and just spending too much time with some of the crowds that, you know, NFL teams were worried he was hanging with leading into his NFL career beginning. So it's really sad. It's a 23-year-old kid whose life appears to be over, and of course, even more than that, one life that we know is over is a 27-year-old Odin Lloyd.
Eric, you look at the $40 million contract, and in fairness to the Patriots, Hernandez had been around. He played for a couple of years. He was worth the money on the football field. There was no question about that. Obviously, the Patriots saw that he was producing and fulfilling all of his responsibilities. Obviously, they weren't aware of everything going on off the football field. But in some respects, they'd been vindicated when other teams had him off their draft board and people challenged them for taking this troubled young man from Florida, or the University of Florida, I should say, not from Florida originally, he's from Connecticut originally. But when they took him, you know, he stepped up and he appeared to be doing okay. So again, I don't want to go after the Patriots on this, but the price of that mistake is a $7 million cap hit this year, an additional $5 million cap hit next year. And apparently only $9 of the $12 million in bonus money has been paid. They're going to contest the last $3 million as well as a couple, you know, years of base salary. Hernandez's position, he still owed $5 million more while he's, you know, sitting in jail. But this is another indication of the price of, you know, we always hear the expression, you can't have a locker room full of choir boys.
Right.
Well, you can't have a locker room with attempted murderers in it either.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And I think this might be the low point of Robert Kraft owning the team. I mean, Spygate was a black eye on the franchise, no question about it. You know, it stained them to this day. People still talk about it. They still consider Bill Belichick to be a cheater or whatever people want to call it. But to me, this is worse, and it has... You know, it's not like Robert Kraft was there with him, and it's not like anyone in the Patriots organization. We don't think there's any chance they knew anything was going on as far as this was concerned. But, you know, I have to feel that Robert Kraft is absolutely just shocked and stunned and really hurt by this whole thing. And, you know, it's something that, you know, they talk about the Patriots way. It's a little bit hooey, but they really do adhere to a certain level of professionalism and character that I think defines them from differently from other teams.
Well, and Arthur, I take my hat off to the New England Patriots in one regard. It took them less than an hour to release him.
Right.
You know, once this became apparent, even though, again, he is innocent until proven guilty, the New England Patriots were not going to have someone on their team being tried for murder. I would agree with Eric. It certainly is a low point of the Kraft era in New England, but again, I don't think you can point the finger at the Patriots or the Kraft family in any way. I'm quite sure, had they had any idea that the situation was this dire, that the young man would have been gone a while ago.
Yeah, I think so too. And quickly, I'm glad you brought it up, because I do also applaud them for moving so swiftly and showing that despite the money they may be on the hook for later, that this is more important than that, and it wasn't about money. But while we shouldn't point the finger, we do have to say that New England has shown a greater willingness to roll the dice on players. I mean, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention it. Some of the other kids, just recently, Alphonso Denard, some of the free agents that didn't work out, Albert Haynesworth, Chad Ochocinco. So there has been a slight departure, I think, from maybe some of this Patriot way. And while certainly you can't blame anything of this, you know, solely on them, I think that has to be mentioned as well.
It's a great point. You look at another free agent who just signed a one-year deal on Aqib Talib, who appears to have gotten his life together in the last year or so. But even after having trouble in school in Kansas, he had trouble in Tampa Bay. And these are players that the Patriots take a chance on. And so sometimes this will be the price. But this is not just the New England Patriots, unfortunately, this week for the National Football League. We're going to get back to the Patriots a little bit in our third segment. But right now, we take a quick commercial break, and then we'll look in Cleveland, where there has been trouble off the field as well. Another attempted murder charge? We'll tell you about it. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly, everybody. I'm Hub Arkish, along with Eric Edholm and Arthur Arkish. And the story out of Cleveland, Ohio, this week in the NFL, not really that much better than the story out of New England. Now, it's different. Of course, Aaron Hernandez is he's a star. He's a star tight end in the National Football League, but that shouldn't matter when we're talking about the type of issues we've got off the field. A murder charge brought against him in Cleveland. An undrafted rookie free agent, Oscar Wolcott, has been charged with attempted murder. And Eric, this is a really puzzling case to me, because apparently there was a fight outside of a bar, a gentleman's club, and he punched a man. That's the only thing I can find as I've tried to research this everywhere. He obviously, or I shouldn't say obviously, maybe he punched him more than once, but the victim is in serious condition.
Yep.
And Wolcott has been charged with attempted murder. Now, yeah, I've heard of assault and battery and you know, aggravated battery and other things for getting a fight, but there's obviously a little more to this story than we're aware of at this point too.
Yeah, it is kind of a bizarre deal. Like you said, the details seem a little sketchy at this point. You know, the victim appears to be in very serious condition, you know, sort of hanging on for his life. We hope the best for him, no question about it. But the Browns, like the Patriots, wasted no time. They released the player. This is an undrafted guy. Obviously, you'd like to think they would do the same thing if it was a star-caliber player like a Hernandez or somebody else on their roster. So, you know, we don't know the details. We don't know how vigorously this attack was, you know, was made on this person. So it's just a terrible timing and terrible circumstance for the NFL, and you can see why a lot of teams adhere so closely to a regimen of only taking high-character guys. You know, look at some of the biggest busts in NFL history. They had character concerns. That's a huge umbrella. That encompasses a lot, but you can understand why certain teams wouldn't want anything to do with guys who aren't quote-unquote choir boys like we talked about in the last segment.
Well, and Arthur, here's the rub. You look at Oscar Wolcott, and again, this is an undrafted free agent, but he had a January 2011 assault and battery charge while at the University of Virginia. Those charges were dropped. Also for the Browns, their seventh-round draft pick, Armonte Bryant, he gets popped for drunken driving a week after the draft. Now, we've talked about this before. This can happen to guys. This is a defensive end out of East Central Oklahoma. He's 6'4", 265. But then you find out that he was arrested on a felony drug charge while still in college. Mm-hmm. And so you look at Mike Lombardi, and in fairness to Mike, I mean, you know, he's been in the position, took over the ball club really a few months ago. He didn't officially get the GM title until after the season. So in this first draft that he's overseen, he's working with the scouting reports of the old department, but they had to know about these possible red flags when they brought these guys in, and it brings you back to this entire question around the NFL. How worth risks is it for some of these players, particularly when they're undrafted free agents or late-round picks?
Yeah, you got it. And, of course, that right on the heels of Josh Gordon's suspension. This is another kid who was available in the supplemental draft and came with major question marks. So, you know, a black eye for the NFL, obviously, of course, a black eye for the Cleveland Browns, everything going on with their new owner, Jimmy Haslam. This is the last things they want to be dealing with. But, of course, this is kind of becoming the theme of this show. We're seeing the teams are willing to pay a pretty stiff price for, some really talented kids who have some major upside.
Well, and guys, I'm going to throw this out to both of you. I'll come back to you first, Eric. We don't want it to be the theme of this show. We love the National Football League. It's the greatest game in the world. This is not an epidemic. This is a situation where we've had a few, they say terrible, deaths happen in threes, maybe terrible things happen in threes. I hope that we're done. But somebody got the abacus out this week and figured out 28 NFL players arrested off the field since the end of the regular season. Mm-hmm. And it does, unfortunately, seem to be happening a little more often.
Yeah, and people have pointed out that you look at the ratio of NFL players and arrests, based on, let's say, 2,000 players, if you include 90-man rosters and all that stuff. It's actually lower than the rate of society, and I think Roger Goodell can say he feels good about that. It's no coincidence, obviously, this week is the rookie symposium. If there's ever two great hard lessons to be thrown out there, it's the Hernandez situation, the Walcott situation. So, those are the kind of things that can really kind of scare people into, sort of walking the line, if you will. But I tell you what, the frequency with which this stuff is happening this offseason does seem a little bit frightening. And people always ask me, what could take down the NFL as the top sport? And I thought, a player dying on the field or a mass wave of crime or things like this that really scar the league. And this is, we hope not happening.
Well, and the other one that we all hope is not coming is, of course, in the new CBA, which is now going on 3 years old. The players agreed to be tested for human growth hormones and have done everything they can to avoid taking the test. So, let's hope that once that finally gets worked out, we don't find out that these guys are a lot less natural than we thought we were. But Arthur, kind of putting a cap on this, you look at, and I don't want to just hang New England and Cleveland. I mean, and I don't want to hang anybody. The first other team that pops to mind, Chicago Bears, just had to cut their losses on fourth round draft choice Evan Rodriguez, a truly troubled young man who they brought in, who it just wasn't worth the trouble anymore. It happens everywhere in the NFL, and you just wonder if this doesn't have to be looked at from a league level, from an ownership level, as to possibly creating some restrictions on how many chances teams can take.
It's a fascinating point you bring up, and you say it's not an epidemic yet. You mentioned that the number 28 guys arrested since the Super Bowl, so how much further does it have to go to become that? And I think it's really an interesting point. We'll see what, steps the owners do take. But, of course, when they're participating and, you have all these short windows to try and go out and win a title, and now you've got the more sort of convenient rookie wage scale for NFL teams, maybe they feel they're more willing to roll the dice knowing that there's not as much on the line for them to let a troubled kid go if it doesn't work out. So lots of big issues certainly on the horizon, and these are complicated issues, so it's not something we're going to be able to kind of hash out and get through in a half-hour show.
An outstanding point Arthur makes. Before there was a rookie wage scale and some of these guys were getting overpaid so much more ridiculously, teams might have been a little more careful. Probably just one more contributing factor. We're going to go back to the Patriots. Where does this leave them? We'll talk about it in a moment. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. We have been discussing the goings-on off the field and in the courtrooms and I guess you should say DA offices and investigative units around the country. Just a very difficult week for, a very difficult week for the NFL, a much more difficult week for the family of Odin Lloyd, and I think Eric and Arthur have both mentioned, but I want to say it one more time, everybody at Pro Football Weekly, our thoughts and prayers certainly go out to the Lloyd family as all kinds of testimony, evidence, commentary piles up. The one thing that seems to be consistent is we haven't heard anybody with anything bad to say about this young man. Apparently he's a pretty good kid, 27-year-old young man, I should say, in the wrong place with the wrong people. And so we just really want to send our thoughts and prayers to his family. Obviously, that is the most important thing about everything that's happened this week at the moment. But life is going to go on. Our job at Pro Football Weekly is to cover football, and fans are concerned going forward about where this leaves the New England Patriots. Actually, fans of the Patriots are concerned. Many of their detractors probably aren't all that unhappy about this, and I'm not saying that anybody is happy that, you know, Hernandez did what he did to be cut. But Rob Gronkowski has had, well documented, five surgeries now over the last year or so, four on an arm, but now back surgery just a week ago. The report that we heard is that he should be about 10 to 12 weeks before he's ready to go. That would be opening day of the season, maybe the second week of the season, but that would be rehabbing the back. That would not be working out and getting in football shape, participating in training camp. Aaron Hernandez is through. There's no question about that. They hope to get Jake Ballard back, although there's been some question, Eric, about how he has rehabbed that knee. At times he's looked okay, and other times looks like he's still banged up. So you start with this offense that Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels built around this double tight end threat. That pretty much is gone, I would say, for the opening of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I still think they're going to use multiple tight ends, but not in the same way. You're going to see it a lot more as a factor for the run-blocking game. You know, maybe Ballard can step up. In the last game he played, he was a starter in Super Bowl, so we can't overlook him, and especially with his size. I mean, we're talking about a kid who was an excellent blocker coming out of college at Ohio State, 6'6", 275. Michael Oumanuanui, another big blocking type, but has some soft hands. You know, look, I still think Daniel Fells could make this team. They might go the free agent route. Dallas Clark is out there. David Thomas was a third-round pick of the Patriots a few years ago. So there are possibilities. They had a couple of undrafted rookies they brought in who looked good in minicamp, Zach Sudfeld, Brandon Ford. So, you know, they have some options. But I wouldn't be shocked if they use a lot more wide receivers. You know, it just it requires these young guys to step up. You know, Aaron Dobson, Josh Boyce, neither made an impact in the OTAs, so they've got to do something pretty big in camp.
Well, and the Patriots did kind of resuscitate their running game last year. Stephen Ridley was a bit of a not a discovery, but a breakthrough player for them. You know, they also like Vereen behind him, so they're in pretty good shape at running back. They certainly can make a move there. But what's really interesting about this problem at tight end is they also let their two best wide receivers get away in free agency and not re-signing Wes Welker or Brandon Lloyd, although I believe Brandon Lloyd might still be available out there, so that could change now. They did bring in Danny Amendola from St. Louis, Arthur, Michael Jenkins, actually originally from Atlanta by way of the Vikings now, wide receiver Donald Jones from Buffalo, the two rookies that Eric mentioned. So maybe they're better at wide receiver, but there isn't that Welker type of guy who can be the leader of the safety blanket for Brady in the passing game, either at wide receiver or tight end.
No, certainly not. Not someone who's going to have that comfort level immediately with Brady. So, I mean, you know, we've seen him do do a lot with not, you know, even as much as it appears he has here. So, I wouldn't put anything past Tom Brady. I think this offense is still going to have some real juice. But I think you guys really hit the nail on the head right at the end there when you talked about the running game. Patriots are second in the NFL in rushing attempts last year. So you're absolutely right. They definitely made that a much stronger emphasis. And you'd have to think with the acquisition of LeGarrette Blount and, you know, heck, maybe even Leon Washington finds his way in the backfield. I know they think Shane Vereen can give them even more. So I think there are still some horses there to run the football a lot and try and at least take the pressure off Brady early while he figures out who these targets are going to be.
Well, Arthur, that's a great point. And don't forget that Leon Washington probably was brought in to play the Kevin Falk role altogether. And so he will be a factor more in the passing game than the running game. But they love all their young backs, Ridley, Vereen, Bolden. They add LeGarrette Blount. That obviously is going to be part of the answer. We have to take another commercial break here. There is other football news in the NFL this week. Some of it having to do with off-the-field issues again with MJD, but good news for a change in Jacksonville, so we'll talk about that in a moment. We are, and we're actually going to get around to talking some football now. I'm Hub Arkish, along with Arthur Arkish and Eric Edholm. And guys, good news for Maurice Jones-Drew, good news for the Jacksonville Jaguars. There will be no charges brought against MJD for the fight. He got in altercation, I should say, outside of a bar in Jacksonville. And, Arthur, I know that that's your beat. It's interesting because when this was first announced, it appeared like MJD might be in some pretty serious trouble. But whatever the real story was, you know, maybe at best he was defending himself, or it could come down to boys will be boys.
Yeah, sure, and it's another instances of us, you know, not wanting to run with things until, obviously, a conclusion has been reached. So, of course, this is great news for Maurice Jones-Drew and great news for the Jaguars. Now they'll turn their attention to get him back on the field and healthy. He said he hopes to be back out there by camp. Of course, he's coming back from the Liz Frank injury. You remember the last time that Mojo was coming off a season-ending injury, he went on to lead the league in rushing. So we'll see definitely different. That was a knee. This is a foot. But they need the same kind of bounce back from him, particularly an offense that has a lot of question marks elsewhere.
Arthur, one other interesting note with the Jags. They've got their new 2013 roster out. You know, when you look at some of the college recruiting lists in recent years, they now have taken the designated certain players as ATH, meaning athlete, because he's a guy without a position. The Jaguars seem to have taken that to another step. Apparently, Denard Robinson is their new OW.
That's right, yeah, OW for offensive weapon, and I believe it is self-appointed. He was calling himself that leading up to the draft, and you know, I think it's fun. I think the Jaguars are looking for excitement. We talk about that a lot on this show. Certainly this is a kid who brought plenty of excitement to Ann Arbor during his collegiate career, and they can find a way to, you know, carve out a particular niche for him. They're talking about getting him about 12 to 15 snaps per game in a variety of ways. I think you'll see him definitely used on some gadget plays, may see him get a chance to throw the football every now and again. So it's exciting, and, you know, with Mojo entering a contract year, they're saying more than anything he's going to be a running back. Now, of course, he's undersized, but it's going to be fascinating to see how this develops and what kind of a role he is able to carve out.
Eric, I will tell you this, and full disclosure, we do this all the time. I'm a Michigan alum.
Guy.
I'm sitting
yes,
here in my Michigan T-shirt doing the show. But that just means I watched a lot of games, and running back is definitely his position, because even though he was doing it from quarterback, when you've seen this young man accelerate in the hole, and when you see the 90-degree cuts and the vision and the speed, the you know, full speed in a half a step, I'm not saying he's going to be a great NFL player, but they've got to get him the ball from the line of scrimmage and let him try and create his own open space. That's what he did so well in Ann Arbor.
So which position should Chad Henne play? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, well, Chad Henne, I got a hunch, to be playing elsewhere.
Right.
Could be his position. But, quarterback is wide open.
Yeah.
You guys know I'm a Blaine Gabbert fan, but Gabbert doesn't have anything to own the position, so we'll have to see who ends up a quarterback for the Jaguars. Minnesota Vikings, Eric, I know a team you've kept a close eye on. No surprise, the Green Bay Packers. The surprise was the Green Bay Packers put Desmond Bishop on the street.
Mm.
He wasn't there long. The Vikings had a real need there. That's why people were trying to tie him together with Brian Urlacher. They got a guy 7 years younger who is coming off a season loss to a hamstring injury, but was the leading tackler and one of the best athletes on the Packers in 2011.
Yeah, I really thought he was an ascending player before the injury, and obviously took a little something away from him. You know, they said in the offseason workouts he just wasn't looking the same, and so, you know, I guess not a shock to some Green Bay people considering the money he was making that he wasn't back. They weren't able to come to an accord on a new deal up there. Now, you know, Minnesota gets richer, and they've added some real nice defensive pieces this offseason. Xavier Rhodes will probably start day one. Sharif Floyd will be in the D-tackle rotation. They get the guy who I think is probably going to win the middle linebacker job if he's healthy in Bishop. And, you know, all of a sudden they were pretty strong up the middle. That was what they were so, so weak at when Kevin Williams' game dropped off. And some other guys took a step down. They were bad inside last year, I thought.
Arthur, also in the NFC North, the Detroit Lions, they let Cliff Avril get away. They cut Kyle Vandenbosch. Now they invest in their draft in Ziggy Ansah. They very quietly this week signed Israel Adonijé, who, for people who might not know, was the left end across from Julius Peppers in Chicago and was, quite frankly, the second-best defensive lineman on the Chicago Bears. A bit of a do-it-all, plays the run as well as creating occasional pass rush, can slip down inside and get into a three technique. Once in a while, he probably won't do that with Sue and Fairley with the Lions, but also a former Walter Payton Award finalist. I mean, this guy brings some character to that ball club, and this could turn out to be a pretty interesting signing for the Detroit Lions.
And I love what you said right at the end there. I just think he could be a great fit in that locker room, which hasn't exactly been the most stable, obviously, the past couple years. I think he's been a very productive football player. I like the signing a lot. I think the versatility is the key for Detroit this offseason. If you look at really all the moves they've done, and while they may have, you know, just absolute beast power inside a tackle, they still do have the option to move now Jason Jones and Izzy Adonijé. They can slide inside or outside and make them a better football team.
And very quickly, guys, even though it really is more college football news, the news from the NCAA and the slap on the wrist that they gave the University of Oregon and Chip Kelly. Now, Kelly, I guess it doesn't matter with the Eagles, but should he pull a Spurrier or a Saban, you know, decide he wants to go back, there were sanctions against him. He cannot coach in the NCAA again until the end of the 2014 season.
Ooh.
A lot of people are laughing about that.
Yeah.
So, well, obviously, he's not going to. So what is that all about? Oregon caught cheating big time and got slapped on the wrist, and you wonder how Kelly keeps getting away with it.
I don't know. Like I said in the break, you know, I think he finds a way to walk between the raindrops. But, you know, he's obviously got to prove himself in Philly. I don't think they're giving him a long leash there, even though they gave him a huge contract. certainly Philly fans are going to be, you know, very short-tempered if he doesn't produce a winner right away. So he's got to have results, you know. Otherwise, he might be have fewer options in college and at some point down the line.
And Arthur, in fairness to Chip Kelly and the Eagles, the things that he was found guilty of at the University of Oregon, he didn't break any laws. I mean, none of it's against the rules in the NFL. We're not saying he's a horrible guy. It's just that he did break rules in college, and you know, you kind of look askance at coaches and players who do that.
Yeah, so the message that the NCAA sends is, sure, go ahead and do it in college. You can jump ship and go to the NFL. You won't have to pay any consequences for it at all. So it's obviously a slap on the wrist. I love what Eric said, too. He might get a break, Chip Kelly, that is, from the NCAA, but he's not going to get one from Eagles fans. So it's going to be a short leash there, and we all know how they can be pretty difficult on head coaches.
All right, guys, another quick commercial break here, and then we will continue our series of looks at the most impactful free agents in the NFL this year. We took to the defensive side of the ball last year. Next couple segments, we'll break down offense and see who the big difference makers will be. Free agency, always a ton of fun in the National Football League. It wasn't so long ago that it didn't exist, but now it's become a whole new part of the NFL offseason. And we are looking this week at who we expect to be the most impactful free agents on offense with their new ball clubs. We'll start at quarterback, guys, and you can't really consider Kevin Cobb a free agent. I suppose you can. He was cut loose. He may make a difference in Buffalo. Certainly there were trades for Matt Flynn and Carson Palmer. Alex Smith was traded. The only true free agents of consequence were Jason Campbell, who was a backup in Chicago, who will compete with Brandon Whedon for the starting job in Cleveland. And Arthur, you got Matt Hasselbeck, who was a starter in Tennessee, who will now be the backup in Indianapolis.
Yeah. The Matt Hasselbeck signing, I think when you saw the abuse that Andrew Luck took last year, is just such a good contingency plan, and a guy who's obviously been such a good guy and was so willing to help out Jake Locker and should be the same way with Andrew Luck. So that's a signing I like a lot. Jason Campbell's fascinating. We'll see what happens in Cleveland. I would have to think they're expecting Brandon Whedon to take a major step up, but of course that does give them a major insurance policy there as well.
Eric, I'm guessing they're hoping that Brandon Whedon takes a major step up, but Jason Campbell actually isn't a bad fit for what Norv Turner likes to do, and Bob Chudzinski as well, other than that kind of long-arm delivery he's got.
Yeah, I mean, obviously protection is huge. Offensive line is the strength of that team. You know, I mean, once Josh Gordon's suspension is over, I think they've got some possibilities there downfield. You know, I mean, I've always liked Jason Campbell. He's found ways to win game. He's tougher than advertised. He's not a special player, but he's a pretty good one. And I suspect at some point he's going to get a chance when Whedon finds himself on the bench.
Eric, four running backs who really jump out at me. They all have one thing. Well, three of them have one thing in common. Steven Jackson, now in Atlanta, formerly in St. Louis. Reggie Bush goes from Miami to Detroit. Rashard Mendenhall goes from Pittsburgh to Arizona. The fourth would be Ahmad Bradshaw, who jumps from the Giants to Indianapolis. But those first three are going to be asked to be the offense, or at least the running game, in those three cities. And one or two of them could be extremely impactful on the playoff races.
Yeah, here. I'm curious to see how healthy Ahmad Bradshaw is. I think he can make a real impact on that team. They could have a pretty nice situation at running back. They've got some depth. You know, they've got some youth there as well. Vic Ballard looked pretty good last season as well. You know, Mendenhall, they've been just singing his praises out in Arizona. It's kind of shocking to me. I mean, I've never been a huge fan of his game, but it wouldn't stun me if a new scenery and some better health could really treat him well. I mean, Reggie Bush, probably the same role he had at the end of his New Orleans tenure there. Maybe he'll return a punt or two, be that third down back, get some first and second down carries. But Steven Jackson, I mean, I think at least early in the season, he's going to be a huge difference for this Atlanta Falcons team.
Yeah, Arthur, I'd put my money on Jackson, too, but I am fascinated by Bush in Detroit because he's got Mekhi Lashore there, who shows he is an NFL back. He's not necessarily a feature back or a number one back, but if you use Lashore to do a lot of the dirty work and then try and use Reggie Bush for a lot of the change of pace and a lot of the pass catching out of the backfield that he's so good at, that could turn out to be a pretty interesting tandem with a club that has been struggling at that position, it seems like, forever.
Yeah, I'm highly intrigued by that signing as well. I think it's a really natural fit there. Detroit's offense, as explosive as it's been through the air, has really lacked balance, and I really think they've lacked that game-changing presence out of the backfield. So I think they're definitely looking to get Bush the ball in a variety of ways, but I think he's going to have a chance to break some big runs as well as, of course, do what he does so well as a receiver.
Guys, possibly the most high-profile moves on offense came at the wide receiver position, three players in particular. Wes Welker going from Tom Brady to Peyton Manning. I'm not even saying the teams. I'm just saying, forget New England to Denver. Yeah. He goes from Tom Brady to Peyton Manning. Guy has caught more balls than anybody in the NFL over the last 5 years. Then you've got Mike Wallace, who goes down to Miami and is the highest paid wide receiver in this year's free agency crop. And then Greg Jennings, again, all this incestuous stuff in the NFC North. The Vikings love signing ex-Packers, Eric. And then we can't ignore Danny Amendola, who takes Welker's spot in New England. And we should talk about Victor Cruz, who, even though he was a restricted free agent, we thought he might get an offer sheet. He did not. He also has not yet done a long-term deal, so he's still in New York.
Right. Obviously, there's going to be some sort of conjecture whether the, you know, Cruz or Nix gets the deal. I don't think both do. I really think it's, you know, in terms of a long-term deal, it's going to be one or the other. Probably this season comes down to which one gets it. But, you know, obviously, Welker and Amendola, those two are going to be parallel the entire season. Brady, Manning, Patriots, Broncos, they play each other for a second straight season. They're among the AFC favorites. Obviously, the Hernandez thing throws them off a little bit in New England. But, you know, those two guys are huge. And, you know, Jennings, I think, has to be so big for Minnesota because, you know, Christian Ponder's under a lot of fire. They traded Percy Harvin. They don't have another go-to guy that you can really sort of, you know, hang your hat on there. Jennings has to be healthy. He has to play probably the X, the Y, and the Z positions at certain times. I'm curious to see if he can revive his career up there.
All right, there. Mike Wallace earned his money 2 years ago, but the $35 million he got certainly wasn't based on the disappointment that he was in Pittsburgh last year. Nonetheless, he's one of the fastest down-the-field threats in the NFL.
Oh, no question. I mean, he is an absolute game changer. I didn't love a lot of the body language I saw last year when he didn't get the long-term deal he wanted with the Steelers, but he's going to have a chance to really be an explosive player and really, obviously, you know, help bring along Ryan Tannehill and just kind of more under the radar. But another wide receiver signing by the Dolphins, Brian Hartline, is a guy who really seemed to develop a nice rapport with the young quarterback there. And I think his ability to kind of be able to work the middle of the field now with Wallace stretching defenses vertically a little bit could really give that passing game a shot in the arm between the two of them.
All right, guys, we'll take a look at the offensive linemen and the tight ends in just a moment. We're talking free agency impact players in the National Football League on the offensive side of the ball. You've got Pro Football Weekly on your radio dial. We're talking about offensive players who were free agents this past offseason, who will make the biggest impact with their new ball clubs. Let's look at the tight ends now, guys. And there was a group of guys, no all pros, no pro bowlers really, but a bunch of guys at that class below. When you look at Martellus Bennett, who went from the Giants to the Bears, and then Brandon Myers, who actually had better numbers than Bennett, went from Oakland to the Giants. Jared Cook, a guy in Tennessee who teased and everybody loved him. He's a Ram now. Delanie Walker, who I think could be the best of the bunch, but it was stuck behind Vernon Davis in San Francisco. He's now in Tennessee. And then Dustin Keller, who's had his moments with the New York Jets. Arthur, another new Miami receiver. Of these guys, which one excites you the most?
Well, actually, I think Dustin Keller. I mean, I just love the way they got him on a one-year deal, a guy who, you know, like Jared Cook, for instance, he said, is someone who's teased a little bit only because of the injuries. When Keller's been on the field, he's been highly productive, but, of course, injuries slowed him down a bit last year. But a kid whose arrow appears to be pointing straight up, they did get him on a one-year prove-it deal. I think he's got a chance to really break out and secure a nice long-term deal for himself.
You know, the guy who really intrigues me here, Eric, you talked to scouts. I did, because I was doing the top 50 and top 300 for our preview magazine. Most will tell you that Martellus Bennett is the most complete of these players. He's the best inline blocker as well as being a decent receiving threat. And yet, given the chance to become the guy in New York, he had kind of an average season. And what intrigues me is the Giants let him get away to Chicago so they could get Brandon Myers out of Oakland, who actually had much better receiving numbers.
Almost 80 catches last year. Terrible blocker. Having watched him a few times, I don't think he's much in the run game. But I could tell you that Myers is going to catch balls this year. If he's healthy, if he's out on the field, they're going to use him to his strength, which is this. So I think the production is going to match what Bennett put up last year as a receiver. He was hot and cold. He had a lot of big games early, had a few ones late, but in the middle of the season really kind of disappeared through stretches. The blocking kept strong, though, so they're going to have to find somebody at that position. Bears get a pretty good player, but I've never been in love with his consistency.
Now, guys, it's not often that people get excited about offensive guards in free agency, but there were actually two this year who were pretty highly sought. One of the most sought-after players at any position was Andy Levitre, who went from the Buffalo Bills to the Tennessee Titans. And then you got Louis Vasquez, kind of a nice little secret out of San Diego, who jumped ship for Denver. Arthur, what about these two, and is there anybody I'm missing at the position?
Well, those are obviously the two headliners, and, you know, I can speak a little more closely on Levitre, on the, you know, being on the Titans beat. I know that they clearly needed a major upgrade in the middle of that line, which has really been lackluster the past couple years. Levitre, 27-year-old kid, was very, very successful in Buffalo. He's entering his fifth year, has never missed a game in the league, so he's been highly durable. But I know they're a little bit concerned because he's been slow to recover from a knee scope last season, and he has missed a bunch of time, but he's going to be just an integral part of that offense. And Luis Vasquez, they got, in Denver, and a little bit more reasonable deal. So while I'm not the one signing the checks, I'd probably feel a little bit better about Vasquez, who they got at a little bit of a bargain rate compared to Tennessee making Levitre the highest paid guard in NFL history.
Eric, you can count on one hand, and maybe even on one finger, the number of times a left tackle in his prime makes a move like Jake Long did from Miami to St. Louis. Now, I assume his prime age-wise, he has been battling nagging injuries the last 2 years, both shoulder and ankle. Hmm. The Rams say he's fine. He passed the physical with flying colors. And if he did, and when he is healthy, he is possibly the best left tackle in football, and they didn't overpay for him.
Yeah, I think the Miami Dolphins felt like they did, but they're probably one of the few teams that I think felt that the Rams grossly overpaid. They just weren't willing to go over a certain level, which does scare you when the team that had the guy, obviously is worried about the injuries and maybe doesn't think he's that dominant a player. But, we saw a lot of guys staying put. Sebastian Vollmer, Andre Smith, Ryan Clay, the other guys at that position. So Long was one of the few guys to get loose and get that big deal. And he's going to be a huge part of Bradford's development in St. Louis.
Another guy who's been fascinating, Arthur, is Brandon Elbert. The Chiefs, they don't want him. They do want him. They don't want him. Then they use a franchise tag on him. Then they're trying to deal him. And I personally think he's a little overrated, but there was a number of teams out there that felt that he would be a guy that they'd let anchor the left side of their line.
Yeah, and I thought that was a really smart move by them to put the franchise tag on him. Of course, they got Eric Fisher with the first pick, but hey, that's a good problem to have for 32 NFL teams having two talented bookends like that. You work it out later. It's the same reason I love what Jacksonville did at number two so much, not getting cute, taking Luke Jokel, even though they have Eugene Monroe on the other side. So, it's becoming a pressure league more than ever. You need to have two really solid guys on the ends, and those two teams look like they're going to be secure there.
Will Beede, a good but not great tackle who the Giants decided to keep home. Jermon Bushrod's got a couple Pro Bowls on his resume, and the Bears signed him away from New Orleans, although some people think away from Drew Brees, he may not be as good as he was in New Orleans. And then Tyson Klebo, probably the other big name. That's going to do it on the offensive side of the football. We do have the publisher's pen still coming up, however, so stay right where you are. More Pro Football Weekly in just a moment.
Now with the publisher's pen, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
Well, Eric, the temptation is to attempt to shed additional light on the Aaron Hernandez story, but let's be honest, what more light can be shed? There is so much that we don't yet know. The one thing you never want to do is rush to judgment. We do have due process in this country, yet we've seen a mountain of circumstantial evidence that makes it impossible to assume that Aaron Hernandez could be an innocent victim here. That said, we have to ask for patience from everybody, from media, fans alike. Let's not throw stones at the wrong people. We talked in this show a little bit about the Patriots' part or lack of a part in this. The Patriots didn't have anything to do with attempted murder, and so we need to give them a break. Hernandez's teammates. Let's let the facts play out. It seems pretty obvious that Aaron Hernandez is done in the National Football League, but beyond that, we just don't know enough yet to be able to form any conclusions. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. Our thanks as always to Randy Meyer, our outstanding producer and engineer, and Syndication Networks, our home studio and syndicator. But most of all, as always, our thanks to all of you for listening. Join us again next week, same time, same station, for Pro Football Weekly.